Hello and welcome to the 10th episode of the Hope Illuminated podcast, your source for the stories, science, and strategy of suicide prevention and mental health promotion where we live, learn, and work. I am your host, Dr. Sally Spencer-Thomas, and I'm on a life mission to empower communities with solutions that help people overcome isolation and despair and rekindle a passion for living. Each episode, we're joined by international experts who inspire hope and offer real guidance. Welcome to the show. I am so grateful you're here. Today, we are talking about the topics of leadership and strategy, and I have some very esteemed guests on the call with me today from the Construction Financial Management Association. We have made this topic of leadership and strategy a high point of the whole month and really the year, because in a lot of ways, leadership is at the helm of driving this conversation, leadership in many forms, and really making suicide prevention and mental health promotion, health and safety priorities across industries, across different systems. It's been a consistent theme that when bold leaders step up and really make this a priority and have a lot of passion for it, that things move along much more quickly. And so we're going to be talking about today about specifically within construction industry as an example for other industries, how do we do this? How do we bake this kind of health issue and safety issue into multiple places within systems, within work systems? How do we make it culturally relevant to people who would be paying attention or implementing these practices? How do we do this in a matter-of-fact way, just like we would do other health and safety issues? And what I'm hoping the guests today can talk about is the lessons that they've learned over the past 18 months, 2 years or so, as we've brought these issues into construction, specifically about how do we make the business case for this and really demonstrate to business leaders that this issue matters financially as well as at a humanitarian level. I think one of the great successes of this partnership and watching CFMA take this leadership role is watching these leaders come together at the different summits that have been hosted in some of the CEO roundtables, where it's just, for me, kind of watching these folks come together and having these unprecedented conversations about the importance of this and how their own lives have been touched by this. You just witness what's happening in front of you as a sense of peers coming together in solidarity around an issue when otherwise, you know, they might be competing around things or disagreeing around things, you know, to position themselves in the market. They're all agreeing that this really matters and that safety is of utmost importance, and that together, when they pull together, they can really do some pretty profound things in their communities around this issue. I think the other piece that CFMA has done, as well as some other groups when we're talking about leadership, is really celebrating success and trying to lift up the bold leaders who are taking those steps early and doing things that have been unprecedented or people might have not have thought ever to have done before, and really celebrating their success in spaces and places where it matters to them. It's kind of a wild concept to think about financial management championing this issue, but it's so smart and it matters so much, and it's really helped in so many ways. And then the other pieces that I think about when I think about what leadership might be interested in or need to really engage in this is a blueprint, a pragmatic blueprint at a very high level, but a direction, a strategy, a way to go, somewhere to go. And I think that's also been part of the story of success here with CFMA and construction in general, is that one of the first things that came out of the gate was kind of here's the lay of the land. Here are some questions you need to be asking yourself. Here's some action steps you need to be taking so that people could feel maybe for the first time that this was something that could have a positive solution, that we could take action and have that we could make a difference in the workplace. And then we, of course, need the ability to track these changes in some way to demonstrate this momentum, to demonstrate these kinds of changes. So those are going to be some of the themes that we'll be weaving in and out of today's discussion. And I'm thrilled to bring the CFMA story to our listeners and grateful for everyone who's paying attention today, because this is an incredible story of a wide group of people from across the nation who have been and implementing these ideas locally in a way that's very, very meaningful to the people in those communities. So we'll be hearing today from two people that I have come to really adore over the last 18 months. Stuart Binstock is the president and CEO of CFMA, and he's got extensive leadership, quite the resume, across both public and private sectors in a number of different spaces. He's held executive positions in the National Electrical Contractors Association, the Associated General Contractors of America, and the Institute of Architects. He's got his JD from Catholic University School of Law and his bachelor's from Cornell. And I've just really come to respect him so deeply for embracing this issue within his association. And then Michelle Walker is the heart of this whole movement within CFMA, and I would say the workhorse, the one who's really pulled it all together and has moved it so far in such a short period of time. She's also a very strong leader in her own right. She's the Vice President of Finance and Administration at Specialized Services Company in Phoenix. And she's got tons of experience both in the finance side of things as well as in resource and employee benefit areas. So she really has that sense of, you know, how human resources plays a role in this area where I can bridge that gap between some of the C-suite folks and human resources and professionals that are coming to the table. She's a longtime leader of the CFMA Valley of the Sun chapter, which is arguably one of the strongest and largest chapters of CFMA, and she's currently the president, so having quite an impact down there in Arizona. And she's also the chair of the initiative that we'll be spending a lot of time talking about today, the Construction Industry Alliance for Suicide Prevention, which, while housed through CFMA, is really an industry-wide alliance that, again, is such an incredible model for other industries to take a look at. Michelle and I serve together on the National Action Alliance for Suicide Prevention Workplace Task Force, and she helps lead the subcommittee for construction. And we're now basing a number of other industry-oriented committees to match what that subcommittee has done because it's been so successful. So with that, I will turn it over to start with Michelle. We always start our podcast talking about kind of where does the passion come from? Are there personal or professional experiences that have fueled your interest in this and that kind of keep you going even when things get tough? Michelle, what's your story? What's the path that led you to do this work?
Thanks, Sally. Well, in starting the story, I would be remiss to not mention two other amazing leaders within CFMA who have definitely been at least as much of the heart, if not more so, in driving this forward. And so the story started nearly 2 years ago in the fall of 2015, and Cal Beyer, who definitely was the kickstarter of this whole initiative, he works for Lakeside Industries in Washington State, and he had been at a conference with one of my fellow Valley of the Sun leaders, Dave James, and had shared with Dave a personal loss that he had suffered to suicide and how it had really spurred him to make his mission that he had been working on for years in suicide prevention and the National Action Alliance really make it more public and really try to get it going within the construction industry. And so Dave came back to our chapter of CFMA and said, Cal really wants to do something and he thinks we might be the ones to start it and who wants to help. And when I first heard about it, I had kind of the initial reaction that many people within CFMA had, which is, you know, we're accountants and CFOs, and why would we, you know, how do we fit into this? And then as he started talking about the reality of some of the risk factors and why construction is so at risk of an industry, and really talking about the stigma and the reality that if a man in construction is dealing with depression or anxiety or bipolar disorder or any myriad of things, addiction issues, they are not going to ask for help because that's going to be perceived as weak, as being a sissy. They're not going to share that with their coworkers, with their employers or anything because they're going to worry about you know, safety violations. They're going to worry about if they're having addiction issues, if they're going to pass their next drug test. So they're going to keep this silent and under wraps. And nobody's going to talk about it. And so those people are just going to become more and more buried in shame and embarrassment and less likely to access help, to, you know, seek out resources to help or anything until it could ultimately end in suicide. And as I heard him talking about that, I flashed back to high school, and my dad's best friend when I was in high school died by suicide. And I remembered the, in a small town in a community, very construction-driven oil. Oil was the big industry, but just a male testosterone-driven town that I grew up in. And he, when he died by suicide, it was, you know, everybody knew, but nobody would say it. And it was, you know, Reed died in a shooting accident, or there was an incident with a gun. And nobody would say that it was suicide. Nobody would talk about the fact that he had, you know, he was a highly successful dentist who had returned to school to try to create a new program for veterinary dentistry, and the pressure was too much, and he couldn't deal with it, and he ended his own life. And so everybody knew those facts, but nobody would say it. And I remember my dad and the frustration that he felt in trying to honor and celebrate his friend, and yet being met with so much resistance from anybody wanting to speak the truth. And so all of those feelings just flashed back, and I realized, you know, I was living in an industry and working in an industry that had all of those similar risk factors, and that I had experienced as a teenager with this male-dominated, driven, tough guy society. And so that really just spurred me to say, wow, you know, this is still going on 20 years later. This is still the situation, and we really should do something about it. I had also just finished an HR certification, so I was really kind of keyed in on HR topics, and I was at first really resistant to how this could possibly be talked about in the workplace, and you know, worried about ADA and privacy and all different things. And Sally educated me quite quickly as to how it can be and why it should be addressed in the workplace. And so I was really bought in from the beginning, and had the privilege to work with Dave James and Cal Beyer and Sally on creating a first-of-its-kind suicide prevention summit here in Phoenix, Arizona, that was held in April of 2016. And that really was the catalyst that got this whole movement going within CFMA and spurred it to be taken on as a national initiative within the association and beyond. And so I think that Stuart can share a little bit more about how that's really taken off on a national level.
Thanks, Michelle. Yeah, I think if we're going to talk about leadership under this topic, then you certainly have to start with the same person Michelle started with, and that's Cal Beyer. And I think one of the messages that I've gotten from our experience is that people make a difference, and individual people can make a huge difference. And Cal Beyer has made a huge difference in the construction industry by really raising this with us, CFMA kind of becoming the vessel by which the initiative has grown. But none of this would have happened without Cal. Cal came to us about 2 years ago and wanted to write an article on suicide prevention in our magazine. It's a very well-established, award-winning magazine called Building Profits, which usually talks about accounting procedures, talks about benchmarking your financials, management succession, risk management, but it doesn't talk about suicide prevention. And Cal conferred with the editor of our publication, Christy Dombowski, and he asked Christy, you know, if such an article would be of interest. She came into my office, and we kind of looked at each other and said, wow, this is really outside of the common realm of what we discuss. But at the end of the day, we said, why not? Let's take a look at it and let's publish it. And I don't think we had any idea the tsunami that we would face after Cal's article. We have a listserv in our website called the Connection Cafe, and it just got inundated with comments by people. And what we've learned about this topic is that almost everybody has some kind of first or second-hand knowledge of this issue. And by bringing it to light, we gave people the opportunity to talk about something that beforehand they just would never talk about. So it was very empowering to our membership, and little did we know, the whole construction industry. So one of the questions that comes up is, well, as Michelle kind of alluded to, how the heck does a bunch of accountants end up in the topic of suicide prevention? So we thought about this, and one of the rationales that we came up with, and rationale is probably the wrong word because we think it's a legitimate explanation for our activity, is that the financial people are responsible for all the financial resources of a company, including its human resources. And there is nothing more important to a construction company than its human resources. And if we could do anything to strengthen the human resources, to support them, then we're doing something that's right and good for the companies and good for the construction industry. And that's how we came away and decided that this was not just a do-gooder initiative on our part, although there is certainly some altruistic aspects to it, but it's actually much more based in risk management and things that make sense for a company to pursue. The last thing I'll say on this particular topic is I go around and I talk about this subject a fair amount, and it was interesting. I was invited to a conference. It was a safety conference of contractors in the industry, and I noted that it was a safety conference. We always talk about safety and health, but when it push comes to shove, we really only talk about safety. And the reason is mental health in particular is just way too difficult and complicated and hard for people to talk about. And so I've tried to challenge, and I think we've tried to challenge the industry to talk about safety and health, not just safety.
Love it. Love it. So I'll put in my cheers for the amazing Cal Beyer as well. There really isn't anyone I've ever met like him, ever. He is the utmost connector, most persevering person I've ever met. And I've heard him described in a number of ways, like the Energizer Bunny or like a Rottweiler, like when he gets a hold of something, he's not letting it go. That really speaks so much to the power of one person to start a fire within this whole industry. And he does it all with tremendous humility and grace and gratitude. He's always lifting up all the people around him, and he's just a wonderful human being. And so you're both spot on in that. You know, he is the flame that started this whole thing. With all of his knowledge, skills, but also because he's so beloved and so respected. And Stuart, I love that transition, that moment. I could picture you and Christy in that office with your furrowed brows, like, what? And then your attitude of why not? What is the downside of us trying to put this forward? We might actually, you know, help some companies, help some people, and then the overwhelming response afterwards. So tell us a little bit more about you know, what's come of this? Why? What's some of the science and the research behind it? And what are some of the outcomes and outputs that you've noticed since you've started on this journey? And I'll open it up to whomever wants to start.
Go ahead, Stuart.
I'll take a quick shot at it. So
okay.
One of the things that really influenced us about a year and a half ago was that the Center for Disease Control came out with a report that listed construction as one of the top industries with one of the highest incident rates of suicide. So we had anecdotally been told that it was high. We had been told it was in like the top 10. And so that kind of continued to encourage us that we were on to something, and it was something that the industry really didn't understand and know about. But it really hit us over the head when CDC came out with a report, and construction was in one category, it was highest, number one, and another category, it was number two in terms of incident rate. And that just kind of blew us away. We had no expectation of that. And that really spurred us to think about, okay, what else can we do? And that's when a few months later, last year, we created the Construction Industry Alliance for Suicide Prevention. And so that is an alliance of all construction industry and mental health organizations to try and spread the word and educate the industry about suicide prevention. Fast forward to today, we have 57 organizations that are part of that initiative, which is just remarkable, what we've been able to accomplish with really no full-time staff, no funding whatsoever, just kind of from the passion of the CFMA folks and getting others in the industry just as passionate about it. That's how we've been able to impact this. I'll tell you one other story which really hit me. I was talking to an electrical contractor a couple of years ago, and I was telling him about what we were doing. And his eyes kind of bugged out as I was talking. And he said, how did you find out? I said, how did I find out what? He said, how did you find out what happened to our company? And I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. It's probably one of the 50 largest electrical contractors in the country. And he said, we had 3 people die by suicide last year.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was just floored. This is a highly respected company with a tremendous reputation. And he looked at me like, you're probably on to something way more than you even thought you were.
Wow. Yes, and the whole breadth of the Alliance is just really remarkable. Can you share a little bit about some of the organizations that have signed on and their reach? Because 57 is quite a large number, but when you realize that each, you know, some of those organizations are reaching tens, hundreds of thousands of people, what's some of the reach of some of those organizations?
Go ahead, Michelle.
We had on the last time that we had a call with the Alliance members in the roll call, we actually asked the question of how many individuals do you think that you reach? And some were, you know, complete estimates, but many were conservative estimates for the number of lives that they reach. And it was well into the millions when you look at the number of companies that these different construction industry associations, the companies that are members of them, and then the employees that they represent. We have unions that are members, and, you know, when you think about all the lives that are represented by them, we're well into the millions. And so our real goal is just to, you know, if we can light a fire under each of those associations and get their chapter level, their local levels involved the way that we've been able to do with CFMA chapters and getting things going at the local level with the summits that have been held, with the, you know, education programs that have been held, the CEO roundtables that have been led by CFMA. If we can get all these other associations doing similar things across the country, the reach that we have the capability to have is quite overwhelming and truly inspiring to think about, you know, the potential of, you know, it's not just the construction employees and workers, but their teenagers who are at risk and their, you know, spouses who may be at risk. So we really, we're in a position of making a tremendous impact for the better. And so that's definitely what drives us each day to keep this going.
What are some of the highlights so far in the journey? What are some of the things that have been happening, some of the outputs that you've been able to create that have been moving this forward?
So I think what Stuart alluded or talked about the CDC study, and that was definitely a turning point. I mean, when we started this and, you know, Sally, you and Cal, you know, thought that it was a top 10, you know, the guess was maybe the number 9 industry, and that was, you know, bad enough. We were fueled by that statistic. And then when we started working on it, I know, you know, myself and I look at Dave James, who were really new and completely green to this topic of mental health and suicide prevention. And we started hearing the risk factors such as, you know, just the stigma, first of all, which I think is just number one, the, you know, kind of almost prohibition of talking about anything related to mental health, whether it's real or implied. You know, that's definitely the sense that people have in the industry of, you know, we can't talk about stuff like this. The, you know, limited access to care. You've got a lot of cultural issues with, you know, people, whether they will even accept mental health treatment and care. Just, you know, reality of the, you know, separation from family, from support systems when they're working out of town jobs, which is a reality in our industry, the different shifts that can put somebody at risk. When we started talking about all of these different factors that are just the reality of how construction work takes place, it was really kind of shocking that we were only number 9. And so when the CDC study came out ranking construction as the number 1 in number of deaths and number 2 in the suicide rate, it really wasn't a surprise, but it definitely gave us that kind of, I guess, credibility when people ask, why are you doing this? We had that real formal information to pass along and say, this is why we're doing it. So, you know, some of the things I mentioned, the summits that we've had so far, they're half-day events. They bring in local mental health resources. You know, Sally, you've been a part of several of them. We typically have, you know, mental health keynote speaker. We've had survivors. We've had companies who speak who have lost employees to suicide to kind of share their lived experiences. And so the purpose of them is creating, building an awareness, which is the number one, you know, creating that knowledge in the industry and in the leadership of companies that this is a real issue, this is a real problem that needs to be addressed, and then giving them the resources to help address it. So we, you know, we're big on saying we're not here to turn everybody into counselors and therapists and mental health professionals. We want to link you with the tools available. So one of the most recent summits was in Puget Sound, Washington, led by Cal, and they created this amazing resource directory of everybody locally, all the different kind of segments of help that may be needed, whether it's addiction and recovery, you know, suicide crisis, mental health, you know, counseling, family counseling, a great comprehensive directory that, you know, we did a form of it here in at the Valley of the Sun, and it just blew it out of the water. And so that's one of our real new goals, is to create something like that for each, you know, state across the country, so that that tool is available. You know, trying to provide these tools to companies to be able to link their employees to the care that they need. Another tool that we've created is a needs analysis and checklist, kind of to give people a tangible tool to kind of go through and start looking at where are we at as a company, where are some areas that we really need to address, what are some things we're doing right, what are some things we can do better. So that's been a really good grab, you know, as something that people have been able to grab onto and really use. And so, you know, things like that, that we're just trying to build, you know, first, you know, building that top-down buy-in, getting the leaders involved, getting them bought in, trying to encourage them to share their, you know, lived experiences, their stories of success, always trying to keep that focus on hope, and then, you know, giving the tools to connect, you know, making sure that people understand how to use their EAPs, making sure they understand how to access behavioral health in their employee group medical programs, all of those things, so that, you know, suddenly the employer isn't the one responsible for each person, you know, helping each person personally, but how do we connect them to care, and how do we break down these walls that they feel comfortable to go and access that care when they need it.
Awesome. I'm going to kind of rewind you a little bit. There were like several places I wanted to jump in, but you are on a roll. You mentioned Cal's resource directory, and not only connecting to kind of general mental health resources, but also addiction resources. And we have also discovered through this process of digging in deep of why construction, that there are also some pain issues that are resulting in some opiate concerns. Can you speak a little bit about that and how that's dovetailing with this work?
Sure, absolutely. So as Stuart talked about a lot, safety is a big focus in construction, and is really one of the reasons that I think we've been able to have the success that we've had so far in addressing this as an industry, is because it really does fit in nicely with our focus on safety. So along with safety comes the reality of workplace injuries that have taken place, and the reality that some of those workplace injuries lead to ongoing chronic pain, or even if they don't lead to chronic pain, during the initial treatment of the injury, opiates have been introduced, and then addiction has resulted from that. And so one of the real pushes is working with, you know, really creating strong injury management plans that aren't dependent on opiates, working with, workers' comp carriers, even educating them on the, limiting the length and duration of prescriptions that are authorized and implementing other therapies and other methods of care and pain management that don't create those addiction pathways that are definitely one of the top issues that construction has to deal with, just in addition to the ongoing kind of chronic pain that can result from years of doing physical work. And that might not necessarily be treated by, might result in opiate, but other, alcohol and other types of addiction issues that people use to mask that pain. So across the board, definitely pain is a topic. And the good thing about that is that pain is physical. And so it's of all the kind of different ways of talking about this, I find that people can gravitate towards that the most because it's a physical thing. And so while we try to tie all these other mental ailments into, making them into physical things so that they're more acceptable for people to seek treatment for and talk about, pain really is a physical thing. And so we can, people can kind of grab onto that one a lot more as we kind of focus on that as an issue.
I love it. So the door that we get to open is the one that we're going to go through. And if people are more interested in talking about safety first, whether we can tie in our conversations to that. And pain, as you know, is so interdependent with our mental health stuff. So, when people are experiencing depression, they're much more likely to also be experiencing all kinds of different pain. And when people are experiencing intense pain, they tend to lose a lot of things that help their mental health, like the ability to go out and do things socially or exercise or any number of things. So that's such an important kind of initial talking point that I think everybody can get interested in because everyone knows how much it shows up in this industry. And just another really great kind of superseding idea that goes beyond construction is how do you bring these issues into a workplace? Well, you start where people are already paying attention. You start where people are already having a high level of value, and then you work to connect these issues there. So if safety is a high value, you're going to connect these issues to that. If health and wellness is, if productivity is, you're going to find ways to connect these issues to those talking points. Related to that, you talked very briefly about bringing C-level people together, and I just want you to talk a little bit about the roundtable that you had, the more intimate C-suite group that you brought together in Phoenix, and kind of your experience with that.
Right. So following the summit, we hosted a group of about a dozen CEOs of local construction companies, some of them national companies based here locally or with local offices, and they were actually hosted by a company who had experienced three deaths by suicide within their company, and they actually had presented at our summit, and they hosted this CEO roundtable. So the invitation came from that leader, and so it made it a little bit less threatening because he's a well-respected, revered industry leader. So it was a warm invitation to his circle of other industry leaders within the Valley. And it brought together, and I think what was striking, and Sally was there for part of it, as we started the time together, we kind of went around the table and asked for people to just share what experience they have had with suicide or mental illness, personal experiences. And we had, the host shared their corporate experience, and one other leader shared her personal family experience, and everybody else kind of said, we haven't been impacted by this. And then as the conversation went on and we, Sally did a brief presentation, and then we just kind of talked about some of the risk factors, some of the, ways that companies can help, build protective factors in. And the light bulb started to go off. And by the end of the time together, about an hour and a half, everybody there had a personal experience that they had shared. So it really reflected one, what Stuart had mentioned at the beginning, everybody, it doesn't take long to realize that everybody's been impacted by this in some way. And two, just the reality of once you can tie it to a personal experience, the buy-in goes up so much greater because you could just, as they remembered those personal experiences, you could see the light bulb go on and the buy-in and the acceptance happen of, oh, this really does matter. This really is important. And the walls kind of broke down. And so I think what it really showed me is, you know, one of Sally's big tips that, you know, you shared with us from the beginning is the importance of leaders, you know, leaders sharing why this is important and their personal experience if they have one. And it just, that was a clear demonstration of once that personal experience is shared and the kind of connection is made, how the walls come down and then the information is received so much more readily.
Great, thanks. Stuart, do you have any tips you want to add on this section or some takeaways that you want to highlight?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing I'd like to talk for a second about is the alliance. So we realized at some point in time, particularly I think after we identified construction as having the highest suicide rate of all the industries, that we couldn't do this alone. And so we've made a conscious effort to branch out to the rest of the industry, and we've been very pleased with the response that we've gotten. So there are many of the organizations have published things in their magazines, in their newsletters. Ultimately, what we, and they've actually co-sponsored some of these local summits that we've talked about. Ultimately, we'd love to see one of the other associations sponsor a summit, and we would join them. That would be fantastic. The way it is right now, most of them happen through a CFMA chapter, and then others join. And we've had, I don't have the exact number, probably 10 to 20 is what I would say. We've had summits over the last year to 2 years, and we've had just three or four just in the last month. So it's actually continues to grow and become more and more successful. But I think the key to our success from here on in is the alliance. It's the growth of others helping us. And I would include in that, and I think Michelle referenced this, the unions could be of tremendous benefit. They're probably closer to the employees, the union employees at least, than anyone else is. And we've been pleased to see we've gotten some recent support from some of the union organizations to help us with this, and they've kind of signed on and are helping at the local level. So we're really pleased to see that. It's the interest has only gone one way, and that's up around the country and throughout the industry. We have a call, I believe, tomorrow with the Alliance, where we have somewhere in the vicinity of 25 to 30 organizations that will be on a call, and we're always trying to get input from them on next steps, what has worked for them, kind of best practices. So it's been a great venture, and I think it's been highly successful. And if you want to talk about leveraging resources, I can't think of something where we've been able to leverage a very small amount of resources into a movement.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of things there that also can supersede construction. So that the publication piece, we touched upon it, but that was another thing that Cal in the early days really let loose. And he was able to position it so that different publications were competing over who could story or do it bigger or better or have a whole issue dedicated to it. And I think whenever you've got groups like that competing over how they can spread a message, you've hit something. You've hit a nail on the head. And that was a really great precedent to set prior to the Alliance being built, because you all could turn to say, look at all these, you know, 30-some-odd publications that are out there talking about this. This matters. Come join us. You know, we've been able to do it on a shoestring budget, but we've also all talked about, you know, if there were more funds to be dedicated, we could possibly do more. And so for the associations and the companies and the leaders who have stepped forward early in the game and say, yeah, I'll put some money towards this to move it along, that matters and that'll continue to matter. Again, another value that you brought out is this value of connection. Through the union, and I've also come to learn that many construction companies are family-owned businesses, So this idea of we look out for each other, we've got each other's backs, like that's part of the value of the company or of the union that we can build upon as we're doing this work. And then the last part, I think, cannot go under stress, which is that we must listen and continually iterate to the people that are being directly affected by these strategies, these policies, these practices, these trainings. What's working for you? What's not working for you? How can we do better? I think for any kind of process of change, that's very important. I think for this one in particular, it's even more important because of the fear that Michelle mentioned earlier. I think there's an over-reliance perhaps on outside experts who may know mental health, addiction, and suicide, but may have no idea about how industry works. So that constant interplay of different forms of expertise of and testing things on and trying things out is absolutely essential. And so it's another practice that you've just developed that I think other groups and industries can take away. How do we have these touch points with the people that are making the difference and make sure that we're providing them with what they need? Any other tips, strategies, things you want listeners to know about to avoid pitfalls, lessons learned along the way that you want to share, either of you?
Well, I think one thing we've learned is in terms of the summits, it's sometimes hard to get people to come to this topic. So, as we discussed, you know, a bunch of CFOs and accountants usually don't think of this as how to spend half a day. And so what we've looked at is kind of expanding the folks who should participate at the local level. So there's no question that folks who handle HR should be involved in this. There are many HR elements to this, the employee assistance plans. And interestingly, probably something a lot of your listeners will not know is CFOs in smaller to mid-sized construction companies wear many hats. They can often be the head of IT, but they can also be the head of HR. So if they're not attending, we should have people from HR attending this because I think it would be of vital interest to them, and I think it would help them with their companies. So that's one thing that we've observed, that we need to grow kind of the notion of who should come to an event like this. There's a large number of people, and, you know, Valley Sun has done a great job. They've gotten CEOs involved. I don't think we ever envisioned that you'd get the CEOs of organizations involved. So by doing that, it really runs the gamut. There's a large number of people who have a stake in this, who should be involved in the summits and really involved at the local level and at their company level.
Right. And I'll spin right off of that.
Go ahead.
Well, just along that path of, you know, not only who should be coming to the summits, but really who is involved in getting this permeated at the company level, because ultimately that's where we have to get to reach the individual people. And like Stuart said, definitely HR, but, you know, how we structured and created the needs analysis and checklist is really the checklist of kind of integration checklist of getting mental health as a priority within the workplace is built from the perspective of, you know, listing who needs to be involved in this and who's responsible for this item within it, and trying to recognize the role of it can't just all fall on one person within a company. It really has to be permeated throughout. So getting, you know, from the leadership to, you know, obviously CFOs have been heavily targeted with our focus, but HR and safety, and then getting it out to the field management level. And the people who have the daily interactions with the employees has been key. And I think that's where we've had just personally the experience and successes that we've had here in our company have come from building those field managers awareness and understanding, and they'll come to me now and say, hey, I think you need to talk to, you know, this employee. He, you know, all of a sudden he's been real, you know, really angry, and he's been, you know, lashing out at people, or he's been late 3 times this week and he's never been late before, or, you know, whatever it is. So they have this awareness and they're not fixing it and they're not having the conversations, but they'll come to me and talk to me. And, you know, and I say they're not. We've had a couple instances where they've actually initiated the conversation, and then the person has come to me and said, hey, you know, he said that, you know, you might be able to help get me somebody to talk to, and then I can connect them with, you know, a resource. And so I think really just getting that understand, you know, from a pitfall perspective is if one person is trying to do too much and try to own it and really eliminate that it's one specific person's responsibility and get it out as broadly as possible to every role and every person within the company. And I think that only comes from just constant communication, and it's talked about at every meeting, and it's in every newsletter, and it's, you know, the posters are up and things like that. So it's, there's not one person who it's like, oh, if I'm talking to them, then somebody's going to know that, you know, something's wrong.
Right.
But really just making it so broadly accepted and bought into that it's not, you know, you don't know that you're going to talk to the mental health person kind of thing. So
it's great advice. So, Michelle, what's the vision? Where is the Alliance headed? What are you hoping will happen in the next 12 months or so?
So like Stuart said, really trying to get these other Alliance members really bought in and committed and filling more of a leadership role. So ideally, you know, we would have an association, you know, host a summit somewhere or, you know, put on, you know, included in their conferences. So we've had a couple who have included it in their annual conferences, and that's been really successful. But then, you know, how are they continuing to put the information out to their members? So that's where, you know, when we took kind of that roll call head count of how many lives are being impacted by our members, if we got, you know, each of those associations to buy into the level, you know, you'd be hard pressed to meet a CFMA member who didn't at least know that we were working on suicide prevention. They may not have read everything, they may not have done everything, but at least it's an awareness and we're starting to break down that wall. CFMA has done a great job of permeating this really thoroughly. If each of those other Alliance members could reach that spot of, you know, including it in communications on a regular basis, hosting a webinar, hosting a summit, whatever it is, but getting that information out to their members in a way that the light bulb has to go on first. And we've found that the light bulb goes on when people attend a summit, attend a face-to-face meeting, attend a webinar. You can read a lot of articles and it doesn't seem to, you know, create that spark, get the buy-in that the, you know, kind of listening and hearing and understanding does. And so getting each of them to do something that would help create that understanding and buy-in within their members, that then when the resources are pushed out, they are actually looking at them and using them and recommending them to their employers. I think that's my end goal, is to get everybody else as on fire for this as CFMA has been.
Excellent.
And I would just say,
yeah.
Sally, can I just add one thing?
Sure.
So the subject of, you know, resources is always, you know, an important one. And as I mentioned, we've done, I think, a lot with very little. We are always looking and interested in looking for additional resources and additional funds, additional sponsors. And, you know, we've made a couple of forays, and we haven't yet been successful in doing that. But we are still very interested in, because we think with some additional resources, we could do a lot more. I think, you know, I could envision us having a full-time staff person, the executive director of the Alliance, and an executive director, a full-time position, as opposed to a very part-time position for somebody in our office who does 45 other things, I think could have an impact. So, so we always are looking for that. And we're... you know, there are models in other parts of the country. I don't know if you've talked about some of the experience in other countries, whether it be the UK or whether it be Australia, but they've been able to marshal considerable resources, considerable more than we have in the United States, and have been, because of that, been able to do considerably more at the construction industry in those countries. So,
yeah.
I'm it's kind of interesting, and I won't say embarrassing, but I am surprised that there are other countries out there that are much more, have gone much further than we have on this topic. And we're looking at those models, and we're looking at opportunities to try and figure out ways to bring that to the United States.
Well, and they've been at it a little longer than we have. Jorgen Galustrup was our podcast over the summer. He was our July podcast, and you know, he talked about the journey, and it's been quite a journey there, but that is the next evolution when you can institutionalize it with funds and with rigorous evaluation, and it gets really permeated, because this is just how we do things now. It's not new. It's not novel anymore. This is just how it gets done, and that's the next level. But what you've been able to accomplish in just such a short period of time is truly remarkable. So let me summarize some of the themes that we talked about here, and then I'm going to come back to each of you for some final thoughts. So we started off, I kind of introduced the idea of like the importance of being bold in this space, that leaders can't be afraid about what other people are going to think about them if they talk about this stuff. It's really important that certain champions are able to stand up and say, you know what, this matters. It matters to me. It matters to my company. It matters to this industry. Whatever role you're playing, that there's somebody, or better yet, a group of people who are standing up and proclaiming that for people to turn their heads and say, why? Why does this matter? And then we can get into the data and the stories and how it affects business. We really spoke a lot about the power of the personal. And in particular, we talked quite a bit about Cal Beyer and the number of ways that he has been able to influence this whole industry, and how it actually really started with a personal experience and a conversation. And he was able to influence systems and series of groups of people with his passion and his story, and also making this issue culturally relevant. He was an excellent translator for the things that we knew that were going out in the world, but then where did it really matter when it hit home at the industry? Michelle, your story about your father's loss and how that impacted you so many years later, I'm going to read back a quote because I think it still is unfortunately very true today. Everybody knew those facts, but no one could speak the truth. There was no way we could honor that person's life. And I really do feel like even today, unfortunately, there's so much fear and shame and misinformation about these issues that we're not able to process the grief, and that's probably even more exponentially so in our workplaces. Coworkers are often the forgotten grievers in this, and so I also know that as part of the suicide prevention effort, we've also spent some time acknowledging that loss, that unprocessed grief that so many companies have that's been unspoken, and how do we help support people through that? Michelle, you touched on, but I think it's a really important point to drive home again, that HR is really in a pivotal role in this whole conversation. And some of the initial fears and barriers around legal issues and ADA and liability and all of this stuff can get in the way of them doing the right thing. And so how can we empower them with knowledge and the tools to make a difference so that they're not afraid, so that they can move in and manage these things? The tsunami story that you told, Stuart, is also a really important one for other industries to notice, that when you're bold and you stand up and you say, why not, and you take a step into the, you know, the daunting sphere, there's a lot of people in there, in that world, that have stories to tell, want to share them, and want to become involved. And that tsunami of response is just very reinforcing that you did the right thing and that what you're doing matters. I loved how you talked about, you know, why the financial leaders to be in this? Why are we doing this? It's not just a do-gooder thing, although there is a strong component of that. It makes sense. It makes sense because of the connection to HR. It makes sense because of the connection to safety and productivity. And all of these things are interconnected. The story about the CDC report is also important. And this is one aspect we didn't touch upon, but I'll bring it up here. Data matters. The data mattered greatly in this story. Before that, it was all kind of anecdotal, and maybe we should care, maybe we shouldn't. But when that report came out, we had something we could really stand on to show people this is critical. And so moving forward, one of the things that we're going to see probably in the next 12 months is a series of articles coming out from a data set that we've been doing in partnership with Florida State University to take that finding of the CDC and dig a little bit deeper and see what trades, at what point in the career, and so forth. The story of the growth of the alliance is nothing short of remarkable. To have 57 organizations on board, paying attention, showing up for calls, reaching out for resources, and ultimately reaching millions of people and their families, that's an inspiration. And we have not had anything like this in the United States ever. And so I'm hoping that not only others in construction will continue the momentum here, but we'll get other industries like finance and legal industry and healthcare and so forth paying attention to your success. you've addressed a lot of the limitations of care, the limitations to why this can't work, and you've addressed it with things of, yes, we can do this, you know, yes, we can do better, and constantly looking at ways to improve it. The summits are a replicable program that other groups can do. The needs analysis checklist, integrating all the different roles, that's something other things can do. Finding those internal champions and having these leadership roundtables, really encouraging people to share their personal connections at whatever level they're comfortable with, and watching that domino effect happen. Me too, me too, me too. That's where the buy-in happens. So this has been such a rich conversation. I have about 7 pages of notes here that I will summarize and link to all of the resources that you've talked about here. But just to wrap up, Stuart, what are some of your closing thoughts?
Well, I was trying to figure out how to close up in a pithy 60 seconds, and and I thought of a chairman of CFMA a few years ago whose motto for his year was people, passion, and purpose. And I can think of nothing. I can think of nothing that better describes what has happened in our efforts in suicide prevention than people, passion, and purpose. We've certainly had people who have led this effort. They've led it with passion, and they've brought a purpose to the entire organization, a purpose that never existed before. This issue had never crossed through our agenda. And I can tell you, when my leadership meets, whether it's our officers or our executive committee, I never once am questioned, why are we doing this? Everyone has that passion, and they know we're doing the right thing and we're doing something important for the industry.
That's a great summary piece. And I remember the very first time I got on the plane to the CFMA conference in San Antonio, and I had the same kind of thing, like, what? How did I get here? What is going on here? How am I going to fit in with this world of accountants? And it was the people, the passion, and the purpose of your association that immediately were welcoming and embracing and curious, and what do I do? And now every time I get in front of any group related to this story, I tear up because I know how far we've come and how each person in that audience is going to take this information like a sponge and make a huge difference. Michelle, your closing comments?
I think I just always go back to, you know, when you start hearing the stories and hearing the reality of suicide and realizing how isolated a person at that point is. And they're, even if they're among other people, they're so isolated and cut off from those around them who may love them and care about them but not know how badly they're hurting and how bad in need they are. And so if we can tie that to the, you know, my brother's keeper mentality that you alluded to, Sally, you know, we've got an industry where there's a lot of camaraderie, there's a lot of teamwork built right in, and if we can really expand that, you know, peer support and my brother's keeper mentality to include, you know, caring about each other's mental health and knowing when something is going wrong and when somebody needs help, that, you know, we're going to revolutionize the industry, not just from a mental health perspective, but just from an overall cultural perspective. And this can just tie in and help so many lives. And so I'm just so honored to be a part of it.
Great. Well, thank you both. I know how incredibly busy you are, so to give up an hour to have this conversation with me makes me so grateful. And thank you for all the listeners who tuned in. We're going to have all the resources on the show notes with the links and the takeaways summarized. Where's the best place I can go to find the Alliance information, Michelle?
PreventConstructionSuicide.com.
Perfect. And for more episodes, please subscribe at iTunes, leave a rating and review, and you'll get put into a drawing for an Amazon gift card. You can sign up for the newsletter. We have Twitter chats, webinars, all kinds of content coming out that will be relevant to the conversation today. So in closing, I just want to remind everybody to open your heart, challenge your thinking, and take action to save lives. Together, we can restore dignity and sustain a passion for living. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
Five seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo! Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.